I'm going to walk with the mic and let everybody introduce your name, your dog, and the school if you want.
Yeah.
We'll start with Frank.
Okay. Frank Welty, incoming GDUC immediate past president. My dog's name is Jeep. He's a 7-year-old yellow lab from Guide Dogs for the Blind, Oregon.
Good morning. I'm Katherine Johnson. I'm from Colorado, and I'm a GDUC member. And my dog is Otto, O-T-T-O, from Guide Dogs of America. We just graduated April the 19th of 2015. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Nancy Unger from Riverside, and I lost my guide dog to cancer in January of this year, but I hopefully we'll get a new dog from GDD early next year, they said. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Diane Harms with my yellow lab, Morty. He's 2 years old. He's from Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Baby dog.
Debbie Sands. I am actually a Guide Dogs of America alumni, actually employee alumni. I have a current business where I'm service dog, public access education consultant.
I'm Ken Metz, and Frank Welty said he was the almost immediate past president because I'm almost the immediate president. So welcome to our wonderful program. And I have a dog. Oh, that's a requirement. Her name is Kari, and she is a black Labrador from GDA and 6 years old.
And Kari is another one of those that could sit next to a rock and be best friends.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm Pam Metz, and I actually got elected to the CCB board. Oh, I'm surprised. But my dog, Kingston, is retiring at the end of this month. I'm going to miss the yellow boy. But I go into class on January 3rd. He is from GDA. And I'm going to miss my dog.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Linda Porrell. And I have this adorable little black lab named Tamar, T-A-M-A-R. No A on the end, please. Tamar. And she is turning 4 years old this month. And she comes from Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Zhao. I'm a CCB scholarship winner. And I have a tiny black lab named Helene. Not Helen, but Helene from Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Good morning. My name is Keith Tomlinson. I'm a field manager with Guide Dogs for the Blind in Southern California.
Hi, I'm Jan Johnson. Between dogs, and I'm from Claremont, and I just joined Gaduk today again.
Hi, I'm Tanya Williams. I don't have a dog yet, unless you count my little chihuahua. But I am looking to get a dog in the very, very near future.
Good morning. My name's William Elliott. I joined GDUC this morning. I have been working with Leif, my black Labrador, from Guide Dogs for the Blind in San Rafael for 2 years.
My name is Michael Nunez. My dog's name is Peggy, and I obtained Peggy from Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Good morning. My name is Susan Glass. I'm from the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind, and I'm here with my guide dog, Zeus, who is 9 years old, and he's from GDB.
Zeus, the king.
Good morning. My name is Linda Samolsky. I'm the Student Services Coordinator for Guide Dogs of the Desert. And I have Laura under the table, and she's my little black lab, my first female dog, and she's 4. There you go.
Hi there, my name is Caitlin Smith, and I'm a new trainer at GDA.
Hello, my name is Chris Medina. I'm an apprentice instructor at Guide Dogs of America.
Hi, I'm Michael Anna Padilla. I'm a guide dog mobility instructor and orientation mobility specialist at Guide Dogs of the Desert.
Hi, I'm Emily Goodland, guide dog mobility instructor and orientation mobility specialist at GDD as well.
I might just say that my name's Bonnie. I'm raising guide dog puppies for Guide Dogs for the Blind, and we're raising our 7th puppy right now.
Hi, I'm Toni Ames from Fresno. And when Vita asked me to be the fundraising chair and asked me to get some toys, well, I went a little nuts. There, you have to go to the booth and buy things because otherwise Vita is going to be charged by the airlines for over luggage. We have a million Nylabones and Kongs and lint rollers to get all that dog hair off you. I live in Fresno with 3 dogs and 6 cats, so I definitely need lint rollers. And Adora is my 6th golden retriever. She's from GDB, and my first dog I got was a golden in 1967. And I thought that I would be the oldest one here, but Ken got his first guide dog in 1963, so he beat me out. But go to the booth because it closes at 2:30. So hurry, hurry, hurry and go buy things. They're only $5. And I am a golden retriever fanatic. I love them. Anyway, it's great to be here.
Okay. Hi, I'm Annie Doyle from Encino, and I'm here with my guiding eyes dog, Kenneth, who is my 2nd guide from Jeb. And he will be 4 years old on November 17th, and we celebrate our 2nd anniversary on October 16th.
And here we go.
My name is Charlene Ornelas. I have a golden retriever. His name is Riggs, and he's my Christmas Eve present because that's when he was born. So I tell the public his name is Rudy, short for Rudolph.
We have a person who just walked in. Would you like to introduce your name and your dog's name and the school he's from?
Okay, well, my name is Ariel Martinez, and I actually, right now, I don't own a dog, but I want to get one pretty soon.
Here's a raffle ticket.
Oh, thank you.
Is there anybody else who's new? Oops. Not new, who just came in.
My name is Penny Valdivinos, and I have Earl, and he's from the CNI.
Okay, and here's your raffle ticket.
I got one earlier.
Okay.
In the other.
Anybody else? Oh, yes, the Trojan.
What? No, I don't have a question.
No, your name and your dog's name and your school.
Oh, I'm just slumming here. Okay, Robert Acosta, my dog's name is Angus, Guide Dogs of America.
Hi, my name is Dan Rawlings, and I'm the new director of training at Guide Dogs of America.
I think I know you.
Alice?
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. So let's do some quick door prizes, and then we're going to jump right into our program. So take a look at your ticket, and what I need to do is have the cup and put the extra tickets in there. Did you do
They're
that?
All, in.
All right. Okay. I need someone that reads Braille because I'm really bad at that.
Can you get your hand out?
There you go. $26.60, and that sounds like Pam. Oh, who's that?
Nobody?
I heard somebody yell.
$26.60? Okay, they may have left. We'll do another one. Okay, great. And then we can hand it to Frank. $26.62. Okay, so you're getting a nice warm fuzzy blanket. And we'll do one more and then we'll get started. Here you go, Frank. $26.59. Quiet, okay. Nope. Another ticky. Here you go.
2, 6, 5, 8.
Okay. And that is for who won that? Okay, so there is a bone. Let me give it to you and a keychain.
Okay,
so we have a Nyla bone and a keychain. That I think looks like it has a little Kong on it or something. Okay.
One more prize.
We'll do later. Good. I'll get started. Okay, so it's my pleasure to introduce to you folks Dr. Lisa Pope. Dr. Lisa Pope is the director of Stevenson Ranch Clinic. She received her degree in veterinarian medicine from UC Davis, and she also served with Guide Dogs of America for a little over 5 years as one of their vets. Dr. Pope is going to be opening up a second clinic on Tuesday, and she was able to still come and join us today. So she is going to be talking about several different things that you folks asked us to have her present on. One is nutrition and supplements. She's also going to be talking about preventative care. She'll be talking about allergies and the care of, and then also how to best maintain the health of senior dogs. So what we'll do is after we welcome Dr. Pope, she is going to talk on one of those topics, and we'll stop and open it up for questions. She has also offered a very lovely gesture that you don't have to wonder or worry about taking notes. She's going to send her notes to me, and I'll put them out on the list. So that way you can just get to listen and ask your questions and enjoy. So please join me in a very warm welcome for Dr. Lisa Pope.
Thank you, Alice. Good morning and welcome, everybody. I would like to thank the California Council for the Blind for the opportunity to speak with you today. It is truly an honor. I have spent a number of years working for Guide Dogs of America, located here in Los Angeles in Sylmar. I've met some wonderful people during my tenure there, including one of my best friends, Lori, who is also blind. I have learned so much from Lori about the challenges you face on a daily basis, and I know firsthand how important these amazing dogs are in allowing you to live an independent life and how deep the bond is between you. Therefore, it is so important to maintain their health to ensure their longevity. I will be discussing nutrition, supplementation, parasite prevention, those frustrating allergies, and finally, senior well care. I want to be clear that I'm not an expert on any particular topic, as I'm a general practitioner, and my views may not correlate with those of your personal veterinarian, but I will do my best to give you some information that you can bring home to discuss. Can everybody hear me clearly? Okay, great. Thank you. Let's first talk about dog food. Doesn't sound so appetizing, does it? Why don't we replace that term with pet nutrition? I like that better. Grain-free, organic, raw, barf or bones and raw food, wheat-free, corn-free, home-cooked. The list goes on and on. How is the consumer you to be able to make an educated decision on what is the best food to feed your pet and how much? My personal opinion regarding raw diets, and one that is backed by research from the governmental agency CDC, or Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, is that raw food is not healthy for you or your guide dog. Can raw food make my dog ill? The answers are resounding yes. Raw foods have not been cooked, and they've not been treated to kill harmful germs like salmonella and listeria. Although not all pets will become ill from eating a raw diet, they can become carriers of these organisms and transmit disease to you and others they may make contact with. We all know these dogs go everywhere with you and contact a lot of people, most of whom we don't know if they are somehow immunocompromised from illness or medication. If the dog does become ill, the symptoms can be mild, such as just a little nausea or a vomiting. But they can become more serious symptoms like bloody diarrhea and fever. Not to mention that feeding raw food may make you sick too. They even recommend you do not allow the dog to lick your face or mouth after they eat a raw diet. And there's a lot of information that is accessible to you from the Center for Disease Control's website. So how about avoiding byproducts or grains such as corn or wheat? Many people perceive byproducts as being inedible parts of the animal. Let's take a chicken, for example, that the byproducts are its beak, its head, and its feathers. And this is not true. Byproducts are simply chicken feet, which is muscle and bone, and an important part of nutrition. Cleaned intestines and organ meats such as liver and kidney, which are all good sources of nutrition. And though maybe not appetizing to us, it is part of what an animal does eat. Chicken meal is simply chicken meat that is ground up, like ground meat, and not whole, like chicken breast or chicken legs. So they're really interchangeable. It's just like eating ground beef instead of a ribeye. I do believe the protein source should be listed as the first ingredient on a pet nutrition label, as that is the highest ingredient present in the food. So when you're choosing a diet, get some help. Ask what the list of ingredients are. If it starts with corn, it's probably not the best diet to feed your dog. But if it starts with chicken, chicken meal, or chicken byproduct, then that would be okay. So that would be my suggestion. So what's up with grains? Because right now, grains are the bad guys. And there's a lot of people that will only feed grain-free food. Historically, before pet nutrition became its own entity, our ancestors would feed the family dog whatever they ate with their own meals. Wasn't exactly balanced, but that's what they did. If the family grew corn and had corn in their diet, so did their dog. The same holds true for barley, wheat, rice, potato, and so on. Dogs are truly omnivores, and so are people. So we eat a lot of different items. We don't just eat meat. We're not just protein restricted. We don't just eat carbohydrates. We have to have a variety of fruits and vegetables in our diet. So back in the 40s, commercial dog food became available for consumers. And today, the pet nutrition industry is a multi-million dollar industry. There are many good brands of dog food available for purchase, and I see the trends every day in practice. Whoever has the most advertising money seems to be the pet food of choice for many people. Right now, Blue Buffalo does a lot of advertising. A lot of my clients feed their dog Blue Buffalo. Does that make it any better than Natural Balance or Royal Canin? Probably not. So what's important is very simple. I prefer pet nutrition be purchased at a pet store. It's typically a higher quality than your Alpo and your Pedigree at the supermarket. You'll spend a little bit more money per pound, but it's probably a healthier diet for your dog. Secondly, is the diet AAFCO certified as nutritionally complete? And I don't really know what those initials stand for, but I'm sure somebody can find out. That means if you feed your dog this food and it is 90% or more as the only source of nutrition, you are meeting your dog's daily requirements for vitamins and minerals with no additional vitamin supplementation needed. That means don't add table scraps to your dog's diet, as you will throw that balance off. And finally, does your dog like the food? We don't want to eat stuff we don't like. Does he or she eat it without the addition of table scraps and not have any gastrointestinal issues such as vomiting or diarrhea? If the food meets all of those questions, it's probably a decent diet for your dog. My personal preferences are Natural Balance, Royal Canin, Science Diet, Wellness, Canidae, and even the upper ends of Purina, Purina One, etc. But no particular order. There are plenty more that are acceptable and adequate in nutrition, but because they flood the commercials does not make them superior. The companies I mentioned spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in research and development to provide your dog with optimal nutrition and palatability, but there's no one-size-fits-all. And don't let the packaging lead you astray, because they'll show you a nice plump chicken breast on the package, but it doesn't mean it arrived at the factory that way. And finally, on nutrition, while I believe there's a place for home-cooked diets, it's extremely difficult to balance the diet to provide all of its daily recommended vitamins and minerals, not to mention it's time-consuming in purchasing and preparation, as well as storage to ensure that the food does not spoil. I, for one, don't have time to prepare dinner for my family on a daily basis, much less for my dog or my cat. So that finalizes my topic on nutrition. I'm going to have the volunteer pass the microphone around. If you have questions, please raise your hand and be patient. She will get to you.
With all the claims that are out there, are there one or two good sources for objective nutrition information you can recommend?
That's a very good question. There is a lot of misinformation on the Google highway. We like to call it Dr. Google. A lot of my clients come in and say, well, I think this is wrong with my dog because Google told me so. I do have a resource that I can add to my notes when I send it to Alice. I like to guide my clients with questions to a website called veterinarypartners.com. Veterinarypartners.com is a website that answers a lot of questions regarding disease in dogs and cats. I'm not sure if there is a nutrition section there, but I will check, and I will try to find you a good source of unbiased opinions, because a lot of people have a lot of differing opinions on dog food. So I will check on that, and I will get back to Alice to get that information to you. Because, yes, you can't always believe what you read, and a lot of people have a lot of differing opinions on that. So that's a very good question. I'm going to take note of that. Thank you.
I don't know if you're going to cover this later in your allergy section, but I'd be, if so, that's fine, about allergies to chicken, and what is your thought about Acana?
I am going to touch base on adverse reactions to food or hypersensitivities in my allergy section. I'm not familiar with Acana food. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I don't even have a dog yet. What did you say about the grains? Because I see, I've had people with dogs tell me, oh, make sure you don't get grains, or make sure it's this. And I remember you said something, but I kind of missed if you were like, it's okay, or...
Grains are okay. They shouldn't be the first ingredient listed, for sure. Most dogs do not have hypersensitivities to grains. You know, there are a few out there that do, just like there are a few people that have to be gluten-free. But most dogs, it's not their the primary problem is the grains. So the grains are okay. It's an important source of, you know, fiber for these animals, for their digestive tract.
Thank you. When a dog, do you recommend changing their diet when they become older? And if so, when?
That is a very good question. Yes, as our guide dogs age, we do recommend transitioning to a senior diet. And the reason for that is senior pet foods are lower in proteins and fats. And proteins can be taxing on the kidneys as we get older. So typically, I recommend around 8 or 9 years of age trying to transition to a senior food. I think it's great if you're, say, feeding Canidae, that you transition to the Canidae Platinum. So stick with the same maker of the food that your dog has been doing well on. And you always want to transition diets slowly. Dogs will sometimes have stomach upset if they are transitioned too quickly. And my rule of thumb is to do it over the course of a week. So you have a bag of your Canidae and a bag of your Canidae Platinum. Well, now what? You want to mix 3/4 of the old food with 1/4 of the new food for 2 days. You want to mix it half and half, or 50-50, for 2 days. Then you want to go to 3/4 of the new food, 1/4 of the old food for 2 days. And on day 7, they should be on the new food fully.
Any more questions?
All right, thank you. Let's move on to supplements. Supplementation, what is necessary? Well, we've already discussed feeding an adequate diet eliminates the need for additional vitamins and minerals. So let's focus on fish oils. Fish oils contain essential fatty acids. Well, what the heck is an essential fatty acid? You might ask yourself. Essential means we must get these fatty acids from our food, that they are not made by our bodies. Most important are the omega-3 and the omega fatty acids, which are found in fish. Krill, salmon, anchovies, sardines, all kinds of fish. Interestingly, we found when we put dogs on omega fatty acid supplementation for their skin health, we noticed improvement with their joints in dogs that had mild degenerative joint disease or arthritis. And that is because they have a good anti-inflammatory component to them just by themselves. So fish oils are fantastic. The supplement is widely available in the vitamin section of any health food store or pharmacy, and it's okay to use over-the-counter human products with fish oils. You just want to ask your vet to calculate what milligrams they would like you to use based on your dog's weight. Everything in veterinary medicine is not one size fits all. We have to use weight as a guide to help us calculate the milligrams per kilogram that they need individually, because what a little Yorkie needs is very different from what a Labrador needs, or a Golden Retriever, also one of my favorite breeds. Just throwing that in there. I've had 3 Golden Retrievers in my life. I'm on my 3rd. My 2nd Golden Retriever, unfortunately, was a reject from Guide Dogs of America because he had a very bad heart condition, and he was the best dog. He lived to be 10 years old, and nobody thought he would live past 2 years. So we really got lucky with Riker.
No, I lost my place. you can use human products in your fish oils, but most veterinarians carry a supply of fish oils that's their favorite based on their experience. So let's shift to joint supplements. Your dogs are hard workers. We want to keep their joints healthy and pain-free. So the goal here is to prevent osteoarthritis or at least slow down the process. I know your guide dogs are well-bred to eliminate heritable conditions such as hip and elbow dysplasia, but they do occasionally rear their ugly heads after the animal has already been trained and placed, as it's happened to a client of mine. So we really needed to focus on keeping his dog as pain-free as possible. I highly recommend you turn to your vet for advice here, and the reason for that is that joint supplementation is an unregulated industry. Nobody's regulating what's there. That means anyone, anywhere, can claim their supplement is superior when there's no active ingredient, and possibly it's just a placebo. We want to provide your dog with a reputable veterinary brand of glucosamine and chondroitin. Human products here are formulated differently, so they don't equate to one another like the fish oils do. They may contain higher levels of calcium and phosphorus, which actually can make your dog's joints worse. So stay away from Costco and Walmart brands of glucosamine and check with your vet. I personally like VetraScience, the makers of the GlycoFlex line. And honestly, I don't carry GlycoFlex 3 anymore in my clinic because you can get it cheaper on Amazon than I can get it from VetraScience and sell to my clients. So there are good joint supplements out there that are available at a lower cost through websites such as Amazon or Foster's and Smith. I like Cosequin DS and Dosequin. They're made by Nutramax. Those are also a good source of glucosamine and chondroitin supplementation. These companies have a system of checks and balances, and they ensure that what is listed on their label is actually present in the tablet. So is it harmful to give your dog glucosamine chondroitin supplements when they're not having any apparent joint issues? It's not harmful. You can do that. And if you did, hopefully if they did have a tendency to develop a little arthritis, we'll slow that process down and ensure that your working guide can be with you a bit longer. So, yes, I highly recommend going with a glucosamine chondroitin supplement. For those dogs that do, unfortunately, get elbow dysplasia or hip dysplasia or some other arthritis in some other joint, there are other supplements that your vet can discuss with you to try to keep the animal as pain-free as possible, controlling inflammation associated with joint because inflammation equals pain. And we have products such as Adequin, which is an injectable glucosaminoglycan, which basically bypasses the intestinal tract and the processing of that. So it is a systemic and it targets the inflamed joint. That can get quite expensive. So we reserve those for dogs that we know are going to go on to having osteoarthritis. Does anybody have any questions regarding supplementation?
I know that Nutramax recommends starting your dog off young, not waiting till the dog is older and having hip problems. And my late husband and I, have put our Goldens on Dasaquin right from the moment we get them. And my late husband's retired dog is 14, and he has some arthritis, but he can still jump in the car, and he can still jump on the couch. You know, he is really doing incredibly well for 14, and, you know, he really does really well with his hips. But he started at 2 on Dasiquin.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Start him young, because that is true. The testimony is there. The research is there that, you know, glucosamine supplements can slow that process down. And that's the goal here. We can't eliminate arthritis. And we just can't. What we can do is we can breed responsibly. And I know the schools really, truly screen these animals that they're breeding for this program to be sure that we don't have issues like hip dysplasia, elbow dysplasia, heart disease, eye disease. So these animals are very, very well bred. There's a lot of research that goes in, and a lot of, you know, the last thing we want to do is turn out a dog that is going to be having problems at 5. We invest a lot of time and money in training them. Start them early, you know. Hopefully they will never need it, but having them on it isn't harmful, and it can certainly prevent or slow down the process. So, yes.
Any more questions?
You were talking about the amino acids and it being in fish. I'm wondering, I've seen it, because I get it at Costco, the difference between the fish and the flaxseed.
That's a very good question. I don't know about supplementing dogs with flaxseed oil when we can buy just the omega fatty acids through the fish. I will write that down and take a note. But yeah, I'm not aware of people recommending or vets recommending flaxseed oil versus a fish oil. I think fish oil is probably better, except if your dog has an intolerance to fish. Because I did have a golden retriever that had an intolerance to fish oil, so we couldn't use them in him. And then there are some mixed views on, you know, dogs that get pancreatitis. Your breeds are usually not the dogs that are at risk for pancreatitis, but for those dogs that can get that, do fish oils and the fatty acids, are they helpful or are they harmful? And I think the jury's out on that, because I really think maybe they are helpful because of the anti-inflammatory processes, and pancreatitis is really inflammation of the pancreas. But fatty foods can cause that. So it's probably not likely the fish oils that contribute to that, more like I gave my dog bacon and now he's sick. Or we had Thanksgiving dinner. I see a lot of pancreatitis at Thanksgiving. It's always nice to treat our dogs, but we don't want to make them ill. So yeah, we see a lot of that then. I'll check into the flaxseed as a supplement for you, and we'll get back to you. So, Alice, I'll have a lot of notes for you, but probably not until after Tuesday. Any other questions? All right, let's move on. I didn't have this subject listed on my presentation discussion, but it is a subject that's near and dear to my heart, so I am going to touch base on it. When I would do my exit examinations for recently graduating guide dogs, they all went home with a small supply of parasite prevention products. These are your heartworm prevention and flea and tick protection. Most but not all heartworm preventatives will also protect your dog from acquiring some but not all intestinal parasites, such as roundworm, hookworm, and whipworm, that they may be exposed to in their environment. The problem is a geographical one, and your veterinarian, if he or she practices here in Los Angeles, may tell you, heartworm is not a problem here. You don't need to have your dog on heartworm preventative. While that may be somewhat true, it's not a problem per se in Southern California, but we do have documented cases of naturally acquired infection. At my clinic, we are huge, huge in screening dogs for heartworm disease because I don't want to see it come to my area. I live in Santa Clarita. All of my senior profiles include a heartworm.
We try to encourage people to do young canine maintenance profiles to for those younger dogs. They all include a heartworm and a fecal test. So I'm kind of a surveillance clinic for my area, and I don't really see a lot of heartworm disease in Santa Clarita. I've had one dog that gets a weak positive when she's not on preventative, and I had one that needed to be treated that came from North Carolina. So, but if you talk to the Los Angeles County Veterinary Department, they'll tell you, yeah, we see heartworm because it's a reportable disease. They see it coming from the San Bernardino area, usually more up in the mountains where it's a bit cooler and there's more water and there's more mosquitoes, but we do have it. Heartworm disease is spread by mosquito, and it takes one infected mosquito to transmit this potentially fatal and highly preventable disease. If you live in the southeast of the country, I like to say actually east of the Rockies because that seems to be where the desert ends and the warm, moist areas begin. Or if you visit there, it only takes one bite, one mosquito bite, and I never even see myself get bitten by a mosquito, much as my dog. So you definitely need to protect your guide dog. There are a plethora of heartworm preventatives. They all pretty much work the same. And your vet will have their personal favorites and can advise you. It just takes that simple blood test to screen that there is no active infection, and then they provide you with a product to administer once a month. Usually it's a flavored tablet, and the dog will eat it like a treat. And here is where an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, because treating heartworm disease is not simple. It's quite costly. And it's a scary time for us when we have to treat a dog for heartworm disease because there's so many reactions that they can have, adverse reactions to the treatment. For flea and tick protection, again, too many products on the market to discuss. I can't even keep track of them. I don't know how anybody is supposed to expect you guys to keep track of them. Gosh, there's Advantage, Advantix, Trifexis, Frontline Plus, Comfortis. It's crazy. It's crazy out there. Too many products in the market. We all know fleas are a nuisance, and ticks can transmit diseases such as Lyme disease, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, Ehrlichia, and others. My only gem here is stick to vet-recommended brands, as the inexpensive over-the-counter products can be toxic. So we're talking about your Hearts and your Sentry products. They are the ones that it's $9 for 6 months. If it's $9 for 6 months, stay away from it. So if it's cheap, it's not likely a good product, and it may be harmful for your pet. And I have seen animals have terrible reactions to those types of products. Those products will be fatal to cats. So I had an interesting conversation with one of my drug reps the other day. Trying to think of where she was from. Muriel was a Muriel rep. Muriel is the maker of Frontline Plus and NexGard, which is a new oral tablet that dogs love. It's once a month. So you give your little tablet, and no messy topicals. Did I get it all in? Did I get it on the dog? Did I get it in the right spot? Is this going to be protective of him? So I don't know why my phone is ringing. Not be. It's on buzz. So I'm excited to bring NexGard to my practice because I have a family, and while these products that we apply to our dogs are not harmful for us, they actually work by paralyzing the neurological system of the insect or the flea and the tick, which ticks are really not insects. They're in a different class. I think the spider class. Yeah, so we don't have the same neurological makeup. We don't have, our dogs don't have that. This is why we don't have any issues with exposure to these, topical products. But if I can eliminate my family being exposed to something that I put on my dog, why wouldn't I, you know? Fipronil, which is the ingredient in Frontline and a lot of now generic Frontline products because it went off patent, is a very, very safe product. And my understanding is they use it for head lice in kids in Europe. So it is safe, but they're hard to use and they're messy and the dog gets oily and then the oil gets on the furniture. So I'm very excited about the oral tablet. So we carry that. It's a little bit more money, but I don't know. I like it. So you're going to stay away from those. I like Sentinel tablets. Sentinel protects against heartworm disease and intestinal parasites, and it also has a flea prevention component to it. If you listen to the head veterinarian, who's the flea guru, we call him, his name's Dr. Michael Dryden, brilliant man, spent his whole life researching fleas and evaluating flea products, right? Right? Who wants to do that, right? So, it's my job. I like these fleas. He, for years now, he has been a proponent of what we call integrated flea control. So what does integrated flea control mean? It means we use products that have a quick knockdown. We don't want the fleas on the animals because they bite the animals and make the animals itch. So we want to knock those fleas down. But one flea is really the tip of the iceberg in the environment because there are hundreds of eggs and larvae in different stages of fleas in the environment. Baby fleas waiting to become big fleas. And fleas' job is to eat and reproduce. That's all they do. They feed, they make baby fleas. That's what they do. So he says, and I believe this too, is that you should take an integrated approach to flea prevention. So you want to use something that kills the fleas that are on the pet and prevents the fleas from jumping on the pet because we don't want them to feed because when they feed, they make babies. So what about those that do get on and feed and reproduce? Sentinel contains lufenuron. Lufenuron is the ingredient that is like birth control for fleas. So yes, in Sentinel, they have lufenuron. It used to be in a product called Program, but I don't think they make tablet Program anymore. I think they just only have the injectable. But the lufenuron prevents those eggs from hatching and turning into the larva or the pupa stage or whatever stage comes after the egg hatching. It prevents the eggs from hatching. So thereby, that flea that got on your dog feeds and lays eggs in the environment, well, that flea will go on to die, and those eggs will not turn into 200 more fleas. So that's really important. Where I live in Santa Clarita, we don't have a lot of fleas. We're a little bit too high and a little bit too dry, and fleas like humidity. But I see them. I do see them. You can use Capstar. Capstar is an oral product that kills fleas within 30 minutes of being administered. NexGard does the same thing. NexGard has long-lasting effects for fleas and also protects from ticks. And so I had this interesting conversation with Meredith from Muriel, and she said, in doing my new practice, open order, I said, well, what is this other front line? I don't even remember the name of it. It's a new front line. So I know front line, and I know front line plus. Well, this is a new front line she had on her sheet. And she said, well, we added a permethrin, into the product. It's only for dogs. It's not for cats. I said, well, okay, Meredith, what if you have a multiple animal household? I believe this lovely young lady said she has several dogs and 6 cats. I have 2 dogs and 1 cat. I don't want to put a product on my dog that's going to kill my cat. She says, well, you keep them separate for 30 minutes or so. How realistic is that, right? How realistic is that? Okay, I'm going to lock my cat up so he can't be around my dog until the product dries. Yeah, I said, no, thank you, Meredith. I'll take Frontline Plus. I know that's not going to kill my cat. Same thing with Advantix. Advantix also adds that ingredient into their products to the permethrins, which will kill your cat. And so they say right on the packaging, not for use in cats. If it says not for use in cats, I would worry about what was in there that could possibly hurt my other animals. So stick with the good products. There's a lot of them out there. Your vet's going to have their favorites like me. I like Sentinel. And some people in my area, you know, we have a lot of what we call, I don't know, I call them little pocket dogs because they're small and people carry them everywhere and they take them into stores when they're shopping and they push them in strollers. It's really quite amusing. So there's a lot of little dogs out there that barely, their feet barely touch the ground. They're not going to get a flea in Santa Clarita because they're not hiking and being active dogs in the environment. They're probably not going to get ticks either. So for those dogs, Sentinel is a fabulous product. It's a once-a-month tablet, and it, if they do happen to get a little hitchhiker, is what we call the fleas, like, oh, I took Fluffy to the beach today, and she came home with a flea. Now what do I do? That Sentinel's going to protect her environment. That flea will die and not lay viable eggs in the environment. So for those dogs, one product is simply enough. And then dogs that do are active with their families, go hiking, go camping, you know, go to the lakes, whatever, where they're going to get ticks, the Next Guard and the Frontline Plus are my favorite products. I think they're very, very effective. The closer you get to the beach, the worse the fleas become. And like I said before, it's because they like humidity, they like moisture. So as you get, you know, from the Santa Clarita to the San Fernando Valley, the fleas get worse. From San Fernando Valley to the Santa Monica area and the beach areas, it's horrendous. And there are people that say that, well, these products just don't work. Well, it's not that they don't work. It's just that the problem is so bad that you can't get a handle on it. And that's where your integrated flea control comes into play, where you use a product that prevents them from the eggs from hatching, and a product that prevents them from getting them in the first place. So that's my spiel on preventative care. I don't know if anybody's old enough to remember back in the day. You know, a little history about me. I graduated high school in 1983, and I always wanted to be a vet. What little girl doesn't, right? So I ended up in the industry, and I went to school initially to become a veterinary technician, and that's your veterinary nurse. That's the person that gets to do all the fun stuff like draw blood, place IV catheters, get them ready for surgery, recover them from surgery. They have a great job. They get to play with all the puppies and kittens far longer than I do. So I went to school to be a veterinary technician, and I was working at a hospital on Long Island, which is where I'm from, and Bellport Animal Hospital. And I always wanted to work with the Seeing Eye Dogs, too, by the way, because they had a school in Long Island. And I remember the days before we had these monthly preventatives where you had to do daily preventative. And heartworm disease was a problem even back then in dogs on Long Island. So we used to use a product called Felerabits. It was a once-a-day oral medication. And then you had nothing for the fleas. You had to bomb your house and spray and Adam's flea mist and flea collars. And we are so fortunate that research and technology has brought us to where we are today, because we flooded the environment with pesticides back then. So that concludes my discussion on preventative care. And I welcome questions about that. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Catherine Johnson from Colorado. What is your take on leptospirosis, and should our dogs be on a preventative for that?
Excellent question. Leptospirosis is a regional disease. We don't see a lot of leptospirosis in Los Angeles, but I actually have a client that comes to me from Fresno, if you can believe that. That's loyalty, right? That's loyalty. That's a long drive to come take your dog to the vet. But unfortunately, she, you know, for emergency stuff, they have to go to their vets in Fresno. And her dog got leptospirosis up in Fresno. It's a regional disease. So you need to ask your veterinarian, do we have leptospirosis in this area? And if we do, I want my animal vaccinated. I don't do the leptospirosis vaccination because of all the vaccines the components in the vaccinations like distemper, hepatitis, parainfluenza, parvo, lepto. Lepto is the one that causes the most vaccine reactions. But if you live in a region with leptospirosis, If I lived in a region with leptospirosis, absolutely I would have my animal vaccinated for that disease because that can cause acute kidney and liver failure. And it's acquired by contaminated water. So, yes. Leptospirosis is a bacteria that is spread through the urine of cows and raccoons and other critters. And people can get leptospirosis too. It's a zoonotic disease. So, and the bacteria goes on to cause damage to the liver and the kidneys. It is treatable if it's caught early, but these animals are pretty sick for a while. So, yes.
It's Margie. I have a quick plug for oral flea medications for those of us that travel. I know of a story recently, and Ginger from Seeing Eye verified. If you put topical stuff on your dog and it's been within a few days of traveling, you could, when you go through the security, you have to undergo extra testing because it shows up as explosives. Not funny when it happens to you. So I switch my dog to an oral medication.
Any more questions on this?
Wow, that's interesting. I love you guys. You guys are great. This is a great day for me. Okay, I'm moving on. Itch, itch, scratch, scratch. Here we go. This is a long topic. I can't believe how long it took me to write about this topic. Recurring skin or ear infections, what's the culprit? Allergies, most likely allergies. I see so many allergic dogs in my day-to-day practice that I almost never want to get another dog. That's not true. I will have another dog. In fact, I just adopted a little blind chihuahua. I rescued her out of the shelter. She was 10 years old, and she was relinquished to the shelter with another animal, so I don't know the circumstances behind the family, but she had this giant sob story on Facebook about, I'm blind, I'm scared, I have terrible dental disease, I'm not spayed, I have a giant anal tumor. Will you come adopt me? All right. Well, she hit the doggy lottery, and my girlfriend was going to adopt her, and I said, you have too many dogs, Jennifer. You can't take another dog. And Charlie will eat it. It's an 8-pound chihuahua. So we went the next day after Little Princessa. She's very cute. We went down there, and I have only had her for about a month. I said, okay, come on, I'm going to break you out of jail because nobody's going to adopt you because you need $1,000 worth of work. So I brought her home, and I thought she was going to eat Willie, my big golden retriever, who has three legs, because she couldn't see. She can see shadows. She probably has retinal degeneration, and she can see shadows. She can see the light and dark, but she bumps into things all the time. But she's adapting. She's really adapting to my family, my crazy family. So yeah, that's not true. I'll always have dogs, but I see a lot of allergic dogs, and I feel bad for people with allergic dogs because it is just, they're just a nightmare to manage. So, Doc, what's he allergic to? I get that question every day. Nothing's changed. Well, I wish I had that crystal ball that I could look into and say, well, Mr. Jones, your dog is allergic to your cat, or the fancy wool carpeting you just installed in your home, or the grass in your backyard, or the chicken in his diet. Allergies are almost always present as chronic recurring skin and ear infections. There are three most important types of allergies. The first is environmental known as atopy, meaning we're allergic to pollens, molds, grasses, trees, weeds, dust mites, the list goes on. The second is adverse reaction to food, and this is typically to the protein source, such as chicken or lamb, or the carbohydrate source, such as rice or potato. I didn't mention grains, did I? And that's because it's really infrequently the case. And then finally, contact allergy, such as flea bite allergy, contact with grasses and things your pet walks on or has contact with, such as that new wool carpeting. That happened to me. a client just put expensive wool carpeting in their house, and the dog couldn't stop chewing her feet. And I said, well, I hate to tell you this, but I think that and it was real wool. Synthetic is a different story. It was real wool. I said, I really hate to tell you this, but I think the dog is allergic to your new carpet, because she never had any problems before that carpet went in. Why don't dogs sneeze and have watery eyes like we do? Well, some do, but the majority demonstrate their allergies with skin and ear infections. And why is that the case? Itching and scratching interrupt the natural defenses of the skin and allow pathogens like bacteria, usually Staphylococcus. I like to throw out some fancy medical terms every now and then. and they get yeast. So let's talk about yeast. Dogs get a yeast infection with a yeast called Malassezia pachydermitis. Well, dermitis means dermis or skin. So it's a yeast infection of the skin, and this commonly occurs in the ears as well as the underside of the feet between the pads that causes that constant annoying foot licking and chewing. Why? Well, think athlete's foot, jock itch, vaginal yeast. They're all extremely itchy conditions, because yeast equates to itch. I've been told, and I believe this to be true, that itching is far less tolerable than pain. Think about it. You just got bitten by that pesky mosquito, didn't you? And you have an itchy welt on your body because of the reaction to the mosquito saliva. What do? You scratch the hell out of it until it bleeds. Well, this is what I do anyway, and scratching relieves the itch, and bleeding is instilling pain, and I prefer the bleeding mosquito bite. And so your dog prefers to lick his paws until they're raw to relieve the itching, because sore paws are more tolerable than itchy paws. But you don't want your guide to have sore paws. Nobody does. That's a whole nother subject, too. Hot surfaces, foot burns. Be aware where you're taking them, because when it's super hot out, like it can be here in LA, the pavement's hot and their feet get hot and they can burn their feet. That was just a side note. So what do? Some dogs develop allergies as they age, and maybe they were allergy-free in their puppy home or the training facility, and then they were relocated to a new location and they were introduced to new allergens that their body hasn't been exposed to, and now they're reacting adversely to those changes. This is not a simple disease to diagnose or treat. First and foremost, we must address the pathogens present on the dog. That means we get swabs from the ears and we do little tape preps on the skin of the feet. I always like to bring out my Scotch tape and tell everybody that this is my high technology diagnostic tool. Little clear Scotch tape, but it works wonders. And then we stain those swabs and those tape, and we look under the microscope, and we're looking to see. And this is important for your vet to do. They shouldn't just use their nose, because our noses are nowhere near what your dog's noses are. So yeah, it smells like a yeast infection, but I've been surprised, and I've made swabs, and there's no yeast. It's just bacteria. So our noses are not really that sensitive to be able to determine. So I would recommend, if you're having some skin and ear problems, that you make sure your veterinarian is looking under the microscope to see who's the culprit. And then we need to treat the skin and ear infection while simultaneously addressing the itch. So we have to stop the scratching and licking and the disruption of the dermis to regain our armor against the enemy. And this often entails using antihistamines, corticosteroids, and there are some new medications I'll mention shortly. And then we need to decide on a long-term plan of action. Ideally, testing your dog to see what exactly he or she is allergic to. Gone are the days of allergy shots. Today we have oral immunotherapy. It's a little squirt of what your dog is allergic to in his mouth behind the lower canine tooth on a daily basis. This is to try to get the body acclimated to what he's allergic to, or the allergen, and stop producing immunoglobulins against it, because those immunoglobulins is what causes the biochemistry reaction at the cellular level to result in itch. It's very it's a lot. So we need to stop the itching, to stop the scratching, to stop the disruption, to stop allowing the skin and ears to be infected.
It's a little monetary investment in testing, but long term, it could avoid costly veterinary bills with repeat visits and medications. Finally, we have some recent advancements in addressing atopy or our dogs that are allergic. Oh, let me backtrack for 1 second. There is no good test for food allergy. So I can't do a blood test or a pinprick to see if your dog's got food allergy. But we do, we'll touch on that in a minute. So let's talk about atopy, the environmental allergies. Two products come to mind, Atopica and Apoquel. Atopica has been around for a number of years. Apoquel is fairly new to the market. It's been out for about a year and a half. Both are considered immunosuppressants. So what you do is you're suppressing the allergic itch response at the cellular level, and you allow the body to heal the dermis and prevent new infections. Both medications are highly effective. Downsides? Atopica in some patients can cause stomach upset and vomiting, but we have tricks and tools to help you address this, and sometimes continuing the medication to allow the body to adjust is simply all we need. If your vet prescribes this and there are adverse reactions, don't stop. Just call your vet. We're here to help. We want to discuss options and alleviate the symptoms while continuing, the medication. Apoquel is the latest on the market. Its problem is not cost, because Atopica can be a little expensive, but it's supply. I was fortunate to be in on the ground floor ordering this product for my patients from Zoetis, and I get a decent allotment, but it flies off of my shelf, and we're left waiting for a new shipment. Many clinics have yet to be able to get it. The maker is Zoetis, and apparently they didn't anticipate the need in the country for how many allergic dogs are out there. So we are left using alternative therapies while we wait for the drug to arrive, and then it flies off the shelf again. Hopefully in a year they'll have this all straightened out. In my experience using this medication, it's highly effective, and it's not cost prohibitive to the average client. So check with your vet if they have availability. What about food allergies? Well, adverse reactions to food do occur, not really with the frequency of atopy or environmental allergies. The only way to know if your dog has an adverse reaction to food is to do an elimination diet, and that means feeding your dog a novel or new protein and carbohydrate source, such as soy and sweet potato, kangaroo and sweet potato, a fish-based diet, venison, rabbit, duck, or hydrolyzed protein, where the meat protein is broken down into itty-bitty pieces that the body doesn't react to, and only that food, no treats, no scraps, no table scraps, no snacks, no rawhide. And you need to do that for 2 months. You also should use a prescription hypoallergenic diet provided by your vet. Why? I can get duck and potato and PetSmart, which is ridiculous because it's just going to make more animals more allergic to other proteins. But that's my personal opinion. Research has shown that there's cross-contamination with proteins such as chicken or lamb. Say you have a peanut allergy. A lot of people have peanut allergies. How many products contain labeling that this food item has been manufactured in a factory that also produces peanut products? Many, if not most, and that's for the protection of the company, should some peanut residue end up in your plain milk chocolate or your granola bar. And the same thing happens in pet nutrition. The kibble is made in factories that make lamb and chicken kibble too, and they don't guarantee that residue will not end up in Fido's bag of duck and potato. But the prescription diets do. They have stringent cleansing and disinfecting protocols and testing protocols in place to ensure that the best they can that there's no cross-contamination. So here again, your vet or your veterinary dermatologist, if you're so fortunate to have one, is key to address you to help you address this condition. And I have a side note and a true story. I had an elderly client with a highly allergic Scottish Terrier. She was adorable, both the owner and the Scotty. She was in monthly for recurring skin disease. We repeatedly talked about what the dog ate, what the dog was exposed to, et cetera, et cetera. She did elimination diet trial, allergy tested, allergy treated. She spent hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars on her pet to treat the skin. And one day, she says to me when I questioned her yet again, what the dog is exposed to at home, what does he eat? Well, I give her the remainder of the milk in my bowl of cereal every day. As simple as that. I had her stop the milk, and the skin and the skin and coat improved,
and the dog had very little flare-up. She had an allergic to dairy. So something that simple, one thing, we stopped. I'm not kidding you. This was years. Stopped the milk. The dog got better. So try to remember everything that you give to your pet and disclose all of that, because you just never know what small item might be the culprit. And she never thought to mention it to me. So that's what I have on allergies for today. And I know there's probably a million questions. So let's open the floor up.
Wow, nothing?
Wow. All right.
How do you feel about the antihistamines such as Zyrtec and Claritin that I've heard prescribed? And the other remarkable thing is I had four dogs from this area, and every one of them had atopy. And then I went across the country to a totally different climate and everything, brought the dogs back here, never had a thing. Allergy was not a problem for those two. I just kind of wondered why. Thank you.
Oh, antihistamines. Claritin, Zyrtec, they're great. You just get a dose from your veterinarian for your dog. Typically with Labrador-sized dogs, we do 10 milligrams of Claritin twice a day. I'd have to look up the Zyrtec dose because I don't know it off the top of my head. And much like, you know, Advil works for me and Aleve works for you or Tylenol works for the person next to you, not all dogs will respond the same way to antihistamines. Some will work better than others, so don't give up. If you do it for 2 weeks, it's not making a difference. Call your vet, get a different one. Some dogs do well with Benadryl. Some do well with chlorpheniramine. There are a lot of and antihistamines are very, very safe products, and they don't usually have side effects like prednisone and corticosteroids, such as an increase in thirst and urination. We really don't want your guide dogs getting up to urinate when you're sitting here in my lecture, because that would be bad. That would be bad. So I try to avoid using corticosteroids in my working dogs. I think that's really important because you don't want those side effects. So plenty out there, plenty of information out there. You just have to see which one works for your pet. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have one client. She adopted this dog probably about 2 years ago, I want to say. She rescued this little dog, and dog's got terrible allergies, chews its feet all the time, and she's doing everything, Apoquel and allergy, oral immunotherapy. She has a summer house or goes to visit the East Coast every year for several months, and she takes this little dog, I forgot his name right off the top of my head, but she takes him with her, and when he gets to South Carolina, his skin clears up. And he's beautiful, and he's not on any medications, and she comes back here, and he's highly allergic. So the dog is regionally allergic, and that's because we have different pollens here than they do there, so different climates. So that's very true. That's very true. But we try to manage your pet's allergies. We wouldn't ask you to move across the country, okay?
Alice, did you have a question? Was there another question?
I just had a very quick question. So I guess what happens, obviously, is just like people, that allergies can be with the seasons. With Cora, believe it or not, in the spring, her nose starts to run a little bit, and then she starts itching, and then I usually take her into the vet to get treated. So I guess they can be just like people based on what time of year.
Absolutely. Seasonal allergies do occur, and it's just because what she's allergic to is blooming at that time of year. And sometimes they can be cumulative, like, you know, if your dog's got just a little bit of an allergy to grass, but then suddenly the oak tree in your backyard blooms, and now your dog is, like, itching, scratching for a few months. You're lucky to have seasonal allergies, because some of these poor dogs have year-round allergies, and those would be the things that are in the environment year-round, like dust mites. Dust mites are a huge problem for, I think, people and animals. So, you manage them seasonally, and then you know, when the season's over, you're off all your medications and waiting until the next time. So, good question.
Hi, this is Catherine Johnson again. Just like humans, we may be allergic to smoke or cannabis or something else like that in the environment. Is that also a problem for our dogs? What should we do about that?
That's true. That is very true. I recommend you avoid being in areas where smoking is present for your dogs. I have an elderly gentleman who smokes a lot around his dog, and he doesn't understand why his dog has a chronic cough. And I tell him, you need to, Jared, you got to go outside. Don't smoke around your dog. You know, and I had one other client whose dog unfortunately got lung cancer because it was exposed to secondhand smoke. So it can happen. And so I would avoid areas where smoking is present with your dog because they can. And this whole cannabis thing, gosh. You know how many times I've seen dogs just stoned out of their gourd because they got into their owner's cannabis? Yeah. I don't know. I don't believe in feeding my dog cannabis. People do. People use it for cancer relief and other things, but I wouldn't even know where to go to find out how much weed your dog should smoke, right? I don't even think they call it weed anymore. I'll have to ask my kids. They probably know what it's called. All right, since I'm running out of time and I do not want to not touch on senior guide dogs. I love my senior patients. I am a huge believer that my patients do not deserve to live in pain. So my final topic of the day today is caring for your senior guide dog. At Guide Dogs of America, and I don't know about the other schools, I'm sorry, all working guides are evaluated at 10 years of age with the anticipation of retirement. These amazing dogs have been with you, keeping you safe for an average of 8 years. That's a long time in dog years. At 10, most are slowing down, and they may suffer from pain of osteoarthritis or other conditions that impact their ability to work. The last thing we want to see is these guys being unable to perform their duty to guide you and protect you, subsequently placing you in harm's way. Generally speaking, 7 is the age we consider dogs to be entering their senior years. This, too, is an average number, as your giant breed dogs, such as Great Danes, Mastiffs, Newfoundlands, are actually geriatric at 7. And toy breeds, such as the Maltese, the Yorkie, the Poodle, they're really only middle-aged. But the Labs, the Golden Retrievers, the German Shepherds, the breeds most commonly used for guide dogs, are hitting their senior years at 7, as their average life expectancy is 12 to 14. Some live longer, and sadly, some don't quite make it that long. I think I overheard somebody say she lost her dog to cancer in January. My condolences to you. My golden retriever, Willie, lost his left front leg a year ago to osteosarcoma. But the good news is that we just did his MET check, and we don't see any evidence that he has recurring cancer at this time, but he's probably only going to live to be another year, and he's only 7. So some don't quite make it that long, and that's really sad for us. What can you do to maintain the health and well-being of your senior guide? At a minimum, biannual examination. That means go in twice a year, every 6 months, by your vet. We all know dogs age faster than people, and there may be significant changes in your dog's health in a short 6-month period. I have discovered heart murmurs that weren't previously detected. I'm not talking about guides, but just dogs in general. There may be some stiffness, lameness, changes in the health of their eyes as they develop senile or age-related cataracts, also known to us as nuclear sclerosis. This is simply a hardening of the lens that changes their focal point. At 50, my own eye health has suffered aging, and now I require glasses to see distant objects with clarity. And boy, why is the print so small on that package now? Same thing happens to our dogs. They may trip on a curb, for instance, or not be able to see an obstacle until it is right in front of them. I recommend blood and urine testing at a minimum to check their liver kidney function, screen for thyroid disease, diabetes, urinary tract infections, and indications of the common disease known as Cushing's. Most veterinarians have a senior profile that includes a complete blood count to check for anemia, which is an indicator of chronic disease, a complete chemistry profile, including a thyroid check and a urinalysis. And as I mentioned earlier, our panel even has an annual heartworm test included, so you can safely continue your preventative care. Discuss and address stiffness or lameness that may indicate a need for non-steroidal anti-inflammatory pain medications. You guys could probably feel if your dog is lame when you're walking, if their gait changes, just by holding the harness. Discuss dietary needs. Is your guide gaining weight? Is the harness getting tighter? Did he or she lose her waistline? Then it might be time to switch to a senior pet diet or reduce the quantity fed, because no one wants an overweight guide dog. It's not good for them, and it's not good for their joints, and they don't want to move. They'd rather be a couch potato. Weight gain can contribute to joint problems. If your dog is already on chronic medications for pain or other conditions, it is advisable to do blood screening every 6 months. And we have a smaller, less expensive panel to spot check those important liver and kidney values. So for my senior patients, at one visit, we do the full senior panel. At the six-month mark, we do a less expensive alternative just to kind of make sure we're not seeing any trends or any changes. At some point, your school is going to retire your guide. And this is devastating to all of you. But at some point, this beautiful, intelligent, and amazing animal deserves a little rest just like we do. A time to slow down and smell the roses. Time not to worry, because these dogs worry about you. I know they do. They worry about keeping you safe. They're always working. A time to relax. They've worked hard their entire life and deserve to retire in style. Keep in mind that keep that in mind when it's your time. There's going to be another dog training for you and only you, and you will bond as deeply with your next guide. I hope this presentation has given you some information to take home and discuss with your personal veterinarian. They really are your best friend and best resource in caring for your dog to the best of your ability. If you have any doubt of that at all, it is time to change vets. Many may offer working dog discounts, and you have nothing to lose by asking. I want to thank you for your time and your attention, and I welcome any other questions you may have. I'm coming, Alice. I'm coming.
Hi, this is Catherine Johnson again. How do we contact you? Can you put that in the email also? Thank you.
Okay, so we are just needing to wrap up because they need to prepare for lunch. But what I'd like to do is give another heartfelt hand and for Dr. Lisa Pope. She covered an amazing amount of information, and then your gift of your notes, you don't know what that means to us because we don't have to sit here furiously typing on our note takers. So I thank you. I wish you good fortune in opening your new clinic. And then as soon as I get Dr. Pope's notes, I will put them out on the membership list. So our luncheon will begin at noon, and I think we need to vacate so that they can set up.
Thank you again, everybody. It was a pleasure being here. I will include my contact information on the notes that I sent to Alice. Enjoy the rest of your meeting. I'm going to go check out that booth. I think I have a few dollars to spend there. Have a great day.